Blog Talk Radio.
Okay.
Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Well, it's not going to do it.
I don't like her anyway.
They're not going to do it this time. They skipped it.
She's a hag.
We're on the air, so something worth.
We are on the air.
Well, this is Rabble Rouse Rich Bergeron.
And this is the tornado thing back here.
And how do you like my little the tornado report label for your stuff now? You like that?
I do like that. I thank you for that. You know, how was my 30-minute one-man audition last week?
It was pretty good, actually. I'm sorry I didn't listen to it before the show.
That's okay.
Planning on just playing, but as it is, it was kind of a nightmare situation. I was late for the interview, for the show, period, and coming back from a wood order. So I ended up coming back just in time to get Sean Jordan on the show, and he was the guy we were talking about a few weeks ago who had the fat guy kick. You know, big the guy who did this thing called the hook kick, where he did the head kick as high as the head, but then he came and missed the head and came back with the heel and hit the guy in the chin, and then he knocked him out with punches. So we had him on the show, and he was like tapped in right at 9. So I got on the show, and Tom didn't even connect yet, and he was connected.
Oh, no shit.
So we just went right to that, and then so I did your show separately, since we can do any amount of shows we want during the week.
It worked for me.
So it came out good. It was good audio. It's just I didn't know how to convert it. I had to convert it for Blog Talk Radio to an MP3. So.
Yeah, see, I got this program. I downloaded it like a year or two ago. It's called like Audacity or something, where you can like click
That's what I use.
Like, click record on your computer, and you can just basically talk, you know, right to your computer, and then, but then it's hard to convert.
Because,
yeah, when I tried to convert it, it says, like, no, we can only save it in, like, an AUP file. Now, remember, I'm not as technically sound as you are. I wouldn't be able to do half of this, you know, plugging in and dialing out and doing all that shit. I can barely use my phone. I just changed my phone, too, but I still can barely use it. And so I was just able to do like a file share website or whatever, free trial, and just upload it to that.
Yeah, it worked. I got it. I just couldn't figure out how to listen to it at first, and then I listened to it, and then I was able to convert it. So no big deal. Got it on. Anyway, we got some big news in boxing this week. Couple big things to talk about. Number one, I spelled it wrong. It looks like I just noticed. Klitschko. Klitschko versus Fury happening this weekend. October
24th. They signed it. It's happening what? You said October, right?
October 24th. It's happening. And you know I'm in a rush when I don't even know how to spell Klitschko. Come on, Rich.
Well, it's not like you're spelling Smith now.
Klitschko, he's having problems with Tyson Fury already talking trash. Tyson Fury is actually taller than him, believe it or not.
Yeah, Fury's, 6'9". You know, Klitschko's 6'6.5". So Fury's got him by about 2 inches, 2 to 3 inches.
And he's like 20 pounds heavier. So it could be Kimbo.
He is 20 pounds heavier, but he's a soft 20 pounds heavier.
Yeah.
He's definitely got, you know, a little bit of a spare tire down there. And also the thing with Tyson Fury, you know, for a guy that's 270-ish pounds, you know, he got dropped by Steve Cunningham. Steve was, as much as we like him, he's a past guest on our show, Steve was not much of a big puncher at cruiserweight. When Steve fought Tyson Fury, Steve only weighed about 205, 208 pounds. So he was giving up, you know, about, at that fight, about 60-plus pounds. and he dropped Fury, and Fury just basically won that fight just by mauling him and leaning on him. That would be like, you know, somebody trying to wrestle Andre the Giant. You can hit the guy, but then he just is going to, you know, get a hold of you and just kind of like smother you and just kind of maul you a little bit. You know, not they win with skills, just win with size and sheer brute force. And that's how Fury ended up, beating and, with a TKO over Cunningham.
How about that?
But I think when he fights Klitschko, unless he really can catch him early, I think Fury's going to be in a lot of problem. Because I just think he's going to be way too wide open for Klitschko's right hand.
What about the jab?
Well, the reason I said the right hand was because Fury's a southpaw. And, you know, a lot of times when you match up a southpaw and a conventional fighter, their jabs will have a tendency to offset each other. I know that's why Klitschko had the problem that time with it wasn't Pavetka. I'm trying to remember who it was, but it was a southpaw, and he wasn't unable to, you know, get his jab working, and it made it just a very dull, uninteresting fight. Now, when he fought Chris Bird, who was obviously a much smaller fighter as a southpaw, it was the right hand that really busted Bird up. That's why I purposely said his right hand.
All right, Tony, how do you spell Klitschko?
Klitschko? K-L-I-T-S-C-H-K-O.
And how does it end? K-O.
Oh. K-O, exactly.
Just thinking about that one. Anyway, I was double-checking it myself. Sometimes it's one of those ones. Is there supposed to be a T in there? That's a lot of already.
No D in Klitschko.
That's a hell of a name. A hell of a name.
Yeah.
I'd like to see an easier name there. Tyson Fury sounds a lot better. Heavyweight champion.
That is a great name. That actually would be a great professional wrestler's name.
Right? He's like,
that is a name that would be a, you know, and coming to the ring from, then you make up like some badass town like, you know, Stone Mountain, Georgia, you know, Death Valley, Arizona, you know, weighing 275 pounds, Tyson Fury. He's coming out with Bert Warrior shoulder pads on, his face all painted up. That'd be a badass dude. You know, he'd sell a lot of tickets just by saying his name. Dude, Tyson Fury is wrestling at, you know, WrestleMania tonight. We got to go see it.
I've been waiting to ask both of you guys, since I'm joining the party a little late here, last minute business, but as far as Steve Cunningham's article on that, now I would hate to question him. I mean, he's trained with Klitschko and he fought Fury, but I'm just not seeing all the potential of Fury pulling this off, but you guys tell me if I'm off on that. What do you think?
Well,
no, I mean, I agree with you there, Tom. You know, Fury's, like I said a minute ago, he would need to really either land a good shot, but he's not much of a one-punch type of puncher. He's not like when Corey Sanders knocked out Klitschko back in 2003, Corey Sanders, even as he got older and got more and more out of shape and wasn't fighting a whole lot, Corey Sanders had a deceptively fast left hand, and it was thunderous. You know, Corey Sanders was a legitimate one-punch knockout artist.
Right.
And he caught Klitschko early, hurt him, and he dropped him like four or five times before the fight got stopped. I don't see Fury having that. And he's a southpaw like Sanders was, yes. But at the same time, you know, he just doesn't have that, you know, he's more of a kind of just club and wear you down type of a fighter, where he doesn't have that snap, that, that one-punch knockout power, the Tommy Hearns, Ernie Shavers, Julian Jackson type power that can end it in one shot. So that's one thing. So he's going to have to get in and just, you know, just really try to maul him, wear him down, you know, just rough them up. The more skilled of a fight that it is, the more it favors Klitschko. Klitschko is obviously a much better boxer. You know, Fury's got to make it an ugly fight, a kind of like a backlot brawl type of a fight. With a lot of low blows, a lot of clinching on the inside. Because remember, a lot of times when Klitschko was clinching guys, like when he fought Povetkin and a lot of those other guys, and he was clinching with them a lot, he was so much physically bigger than a lot of these guys. Now you figure he's going to be clinching with a guy that's now outweighing him by 25 pounds instead of him outweighing the opponent by 25 pounds. That's a big difference. So if Klitschko starts to go into clinch fests, that actually works against him in this favor. So Fury would, one, need to see if he could land a shot and hurt Klitschko, and two, make it an ugly fight. You know, a lot of roughhousing. That's his best chance for pulling off the upset. But like I said, if Steve Cunningham at 205 pounds, who wasn't a big puncher at cruiserweight, could floor and stun Fury with a right hand, what do you think Klitschko's right hand is going to do? Probably put him in the third row.
Well, who knows? I would say if Fury wins, it's going to be like what happened to Patricio Pitbull there, the last Bellator, where he just came out of nowhere, he was getting his ass kicked, and then boom, came up with a left hook that ended it. You know, if Fury's going to win, that's what's going to have to happen. He's going to have Klitschko just charging in and being sloppy at some point and just get caught with a huge punch to the chin.
Yeah, and as far as the clinch, that has been one of Klitschko's strong points, just controlling that clinch, dominating the action in the clinch. And Fury's got his work cut out for him. Come on, let's face facts. Anything can happen, especially with the heavyweights. One punch can turn it around, but I'm not seeing it. But it'll be a freak show. I mean, if I get to see it, I'll be watching for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting seeing somebody taller than Klitschko, though. I don't know about his reach, but even if he is softer as far as being heavier, he's taller. That's a big deal because Klitschko doesn't fight anybody taller than him.
No.
So, I mean, that's a big deal. And then just the fact that he's going to be a little bit wider and he's going to be able to use his weight against him, you know, might negate to his advantage usually in the clinch with some of these other guys who might have, more muscle to burn. Where a guy like that is just kind of leaning on you. You know, like a few weeks ago, that fight, Donovan Dennis coming out of nowhere, fighting this Russian guy that didn't look like much. You know, he was kind of soft. And what happened to Donovan Dennis, he ended up on the canvas. You know, he might have been in better shape, but he didn't have the better boxing skills and, you know, just the power sometimes behind those guys' punches just because they know, a guy like that is undefeated for a reason. He knows how to use his power. And he might be a little bit sloppy, but you never know. You know, there's always that one punch. But, you know, you got to go with Klitschko because of the jab, number one. I mean, that's my favorite punch. But Tony's right. The right hand is the big thing against a southpaw. You want to be able to land that right hand all the time. But you can't land the right hand a lot of times without jab. So the 1-2 is going to be big in this fight, I think. And it's going to be there's going to be a lot of defensive pepper or, you know, speed jabs put out there, more so, I think, than power jabs. Just because of the southpaw factor. He's just going to kind of use it for defense to keep him back for the right hand when he comes in. So I don't think it's going to be a knockout, though. I think it's going to be a battle. It's going to go the distance. It's going to be a battle. So I think Tyson, as much as he will get beat up by the jabs, I don't think he's one of those guys that's going to give up or go down.
Tony, I like that about the badass city, Gotham City. How about Gotham City?
Yeah, right.
All right, let's not get silly.
Well, I mean, you can't, if you're announcing a guy like that, you can't announce him from somewhere like Bloomington, Indiana.
Well,
don't know why.
How about this one?
We also have a
this is the one that the one that Mick Foley used to use all the time. Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. I mean, that's not a badass hometown for a wrestler.
Anyway, we also have a big female fight to talk about. Chris Justino, formerly known as Chris Cyborg. She's going to have her second title defense on Thursday at the Cosmopolitan tonight, I guess, of Las Vegas. I wish I could be there. Invicta FC. There's some good boxing matches there that I went to. But anyway, this fight could be the last stop before the UFC. And the latest opponent they're talking about is not Ronda Rousey first. It's the Tate Keeper, Misha Tate, our former guest on the show. She's going to be the Tate Keeper for Rousey. She's going to go to 140 and fight Chris Justino there. Or this is the plan according to Rousey, or Justino's manager. That's what I'm hearing anyway. Justino didn't sign it.
I think Misha would be well served to think about her next fight coming up. Well, they got her looking past it already, huh? Okay.
Well, this isn't her camp talking, though. This is Cyborg's camp. So, you know, this is her agent saying the UFC is the biggest stage and Chris is the biggest star. They belong together. She does have a contract extension with Invicta, but, you know, they're very friendly, those two organizations. So it's going to allow her to transfer to the UFC at any point. And obviously she wants Rousey, but she has to prove she can make the weight before she can fight Rousey. So she's going to go to, instead of 135, she's going to go to 140 first, according to this plan, and fight at the catch weight there with Tate. That's what they want. No confirmation as far as whether it's going to happen. You know, she's got to win her fight, obviously, tonight before anything happens.
And then also, if she may be... she may be hiring Mike Dulce, huh? Get on that Dulce diet. Maybe that'll help.
Somebody joked with me on Twitter the other day that Mike Dulce diet is bankrupting fighters more than the Reebok deal.
Wow.
He's overcharging a lot of people for this little gimmick thing that he does. But, you know, you got to buy your food from him and everything. You know, he's like, wait, he's doing his own Weight Watchers, cornering the market there with these guys.
Oh, I didn't know that. So I want you can get a container of a meal with his face on it.
I don't know how he brands it. If you watch some of the edited episodes, you'll see Rousey's on it. And she comes back with the food that, you know, she got from his plan. You know, when they go to, it's in Vegas, obviously. He's got his big central operation. So, you know, all the fights that are in Vegas, he prepares the food for the fighters, you know.
But see, I want the container with his face on it. That's, you know, like, and get some special name for the food or something, you know. That would make it exciting.
Well, he did pair up at one point. When Zions was on their way out and the Fertittas still owned it, you know, they were just barely bankrupting it. And, you know, all of a sudden there was Mike Dolce selling some kind of crazy bars in association with Zions on the front page of Zions and everything. And it's kind of funny. That was one of the last big campaigns. Never really took off, of course. But they had a whole weight loss CD thing and everything for the consumer associated with the whole plan. But, yeah, the Dolce diet, apparently it's a very expensive program. I know I did remember reading something about one of the Ultimate Fighter guys had a big beef with Dolce over something. I forget who it is, of course, now.
And I haven't heard about him lately. I wonder what top names are working with him. I know Johnny Hendricks was.
Maybe that's who. I think it was Johnny Hendricks. Well, he doesn't.
Yeah.
I don't think he.
And who was it from the show, Rich? Who was working with him?
I think it was the one I was thinking about was Johnny Hendricks. I don't think he was on the show, but Johnny Hendricks had some issues. He complained about, you know, overcharging him and, you know, not having the stuff that he was supposed to have for his camp and all kinds of other bullshit that he went through with Dolce. Anyway, bigger news, bigger, much bigger, much bigger. Tony can jump into this conversation too. And
uh-oh, I'm all fired up now.
This is big stuff. You know, I've been talking about these class action suits against Al Haymon. And
I heard something, but go ahead.
There's a new wrinkle now, and there's a big hedge fund in the middle of it. Now, the first thing I noticed about this story was there was some information that went out that some of the people that were invested in this fund, this Waddell and Reed investment firm, started this fund, and most of the money for Premier Boxing Champions came from this fund alone, like hundreds of millions of dollars here. Now it turns out that this guy Caldwell used to work for Waddell and Reed, the investment firm. Now he's the main employee for Haymon. So you have a fucked up situation at the very least, you know, insider trading borderline. I don't know if any federal law was violated or anything just by that alone, but that is shady. You have a guy from the investment fund. You make a deal, side deal with him behind the company's back. He puts all the company money into Al Haymon's venture, and then Al Haymon hires him right away and makes him an executive. That is some fucked up shit. And that's in the lawsuit that Bob Arum filed. And he also alleges that these guys from Haymon's organization are making reservations at all the top venues and then canceling them just so these people can't have competition to their shows. So if that's true, that's some serious business there too, bad business. But my mom has been saying every time I talk about these cases, you know, it's sad that everybody's suing these guys, but I think there's some merit to these suits after reading some of this stuff, because this can't be legal. And if it is legal,
well,
it's not good business.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes when you see these saviors come along and they have such good ideas and people fall in love with them overnight, I'm getting a vibe here of a gentleman named Harold Smith, Muhammad Ali Professional Sports, which I'm sure you guys have read about. And I remember the buzz with him in the late 70s. I mean, it just seemed like there was really going to be some action, and then all of a sudden, I don't know how many years he wound up doing, but I know he did a few. Are you guys familiar with that?
No. That's the first I've heard of it.
Well, in the he was a promoter that came along, and it just seemed he was throwing big chunks of money at guys, and it's just too much to get into almost, but just give it a Google. Harold Smith and his organization was Muhammad Ali Professional Sports. And in fact, he put on a show in L.A., the first one I went to when I first moved out to L.A., where I got to see Tommy Hearns the first time I'd seen Hearns fight live. And Mike Weaver was on the card, and Scott Ledoux was in the audience, as was Sugar Ray Leonard, you know, scouting their future opponents. But, yeah, Harold Smith, everyone was signing with Harold Smith. I mean, he was like a penny stock going from 50 cents up to $20 real quick. But then all of a sudden, like a lot of bubbles, if you've ever studied that stuff, these bubbles take off, and then all of a sudden the pin pricks it, and it's like, uh-oh, the emperor has no clothes.
Right.
So it's an interesting scene there, and I'm getting that vibe, and I don't want that. I mean, I really would like to see Haymon succeed, but I don't like that. You know, I don't like what I've learned so far. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, this Waddell and Reed. I mean, there's some people that are invested with these funds from this company, Waddell and Reed. And they had no idea this was going on, from what I read, that all this money was getting pumped into Al Haymon's company. And once they found out, they pulled it all out. And it kind of really reminds me of some of the shit that went on with the Zions company when they went bankrupt. Most of all, the global cash access people that all of a sudden appeared at Zions, and they were all wrapped up in a scandal at global cash access right around the same time. And then all of a sudden they end up at Zions. And then that gets bankrupted while they're running it, you know? So it's like, how are they getting these guys to do this shady shit for them? How, what do they have over their heads? You know, like, what did Haman get over this guy's head at Waddell and Reed that he could get him to do this little scheme for him? And you know, the guy is shady to begin with, as a definition. I think I've said that on the show before. You know, he operates in the shade. He doesn't like interviews. He doesn't like his picture taken, I don't think. You know, the guy is just very quiet about everything he does. And some,
you barely ever see him. Even at the fight card, you see his twin boys, but you never see him.
Something shady about that. And what really makes it shady to me, I've said it before, I haven't connected it to this, but remember, Al Haymon visited Floyd Mayweather when he was in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And it obviously made a very good impression on him at that point, because nobody else was visiting Floyd in prison every day when he was doing time. He was public enemy number one, you know. People were surprised he did just that amount of time. But remember, right after Floyd gets out of jail, Floyd has a beef with Oscar. And Oscar's boy goes over to Floyd's side. Now Floyd's dealing with Haman prime time all the time. So that could have been the start of all of this. And then the Premier Boxing Champions idea came up. He got his guy inside of the Waddell and Reed company to put up all the money. And the problem here is you've used investor money to invest in something they had no idea was going on in the first place.
Yeah,
and
that's a huge civil offense.
I mean, 50 Cent put a load of money in. Did he get any returns? He's just put a couple million in. You're putting $200 million in for all these shows. They're on free TV. You're not getting anything back but advertising money. You know, it's a no-brainer. It's going to lose money for a long time unless it really catches fire. And we don't have any evidence that it is yet catching fire.
Right. I mean, remember the principle that when you're taking the public's money, now this is a whole other level. I mean, at the very least, there's room for massive civil action or worse. I mean, if the SEC really gets into this, and then they'll call the FBI into it. And I mean, because this is all federal stuff too. So, you know, and I would have to think, you wonder what he held over the guy's head that was on the inside. Well, the what's that old cliche? More money than you can spend in 10 lifetimes. Remember that from the movie Wall Street, the original. What's in it for moi? More money than you can spend in 10 lifetimes, and nobody gets hurt because nobody will know. Yeah.
Right. But I think people are starting to figure it out. I mean, it's not a Ponzi scheme, obviously. It's something that has a solid plan and looks great. And, you know, it's obviously not just a show. You've got all these networks involved. But that's kind of the out for Al. It's like, you know, he's going to go to all these networks and be like, you know, hey, hands up, I didn't do anything wrong. You know, I was just trying to help you guys out. Now they got to back him or dump him. And how are they going to do that when he's throwing all this money at them? You know, millions and millions of dollars from this fund is going to the networks just to make this happen. It's not only is it free TV, but he's paying them for the time and hoping to get it back from the advertisers. That's the whole scheme. So naturally, that could fail very easily.
Okay, you know, now, like Rich, when you alluded to Teddy Atlas not being too emotional after the last fight, were you implying that you thought maybe Teddy knew something was a little funny and Friday Night Fights may be back in its original form? Is that where you were going with that?
I think so. You know, maybe it's a conspiracy theory, but I think, you know, maybe that was the reason why he wasn't just, you know, all choked up about leaving the company. I mean, obviously, it was still going to go on with PBC's label, and he was still going to be there. He knew he wasn't getting fired or anything, but you'd think he would still be a little bit more emotional, unless maybe at the back of his mind he knew, like, you know, this guy Al Haymon is kind of shady, and if he's doing this, I don't know. I don't know how long it's going to last, you know.
Well, I just hope we don't have another Harold Smith, because when he imploded, it was a sad day. And here, we're just now getting more stuff on network television, which is exactly what we've been hearing word for word for how long now? More than two decades, probably, going back to the early 90s. That what we need is more stuff like we had in the 80s. Back in the 80s, there was stuff almost every weekend, and good quality fights.
Exactly.
And that's what's desperately needed now.
to get those fights signed, they're throwing a lot of money at these guys and, you know, putting them on free TV, giving them a big audience, taking guys out of retirement to take big fights. And guys like Golden Boy and Bob Arum can't keep up, so they're pissed off. So a little bit of it is sour grapes, obviously, but at the same time, they have some really good points with some of the stuff that they're alleging, especially the, you know, booking venues and then canceling them. And they're also allegedly freezing the other companies out of the television market, too, according to some of the lawsuit information. But, you know, as a money-making scheme, period, you know, it doesn't make sense. I don't think Donald Trump would invest in it, even though, you know, he also invested in Affliction. Didn't turn out too well. But, you know, he's a little smarter nowadays. I don't think he would invest in that kind of a thing.
Well, I mean, I can understand losing it to make it down the road, but with these massive amounts, I mean, you know, there's there's an old axiom in the when you're trading the markets that if you start with, say, $10,000 and you lose half of it, you've lost 50%, but now you need to make 100% to get back to where you were. It just seems to work like that. And then if you lose 90% of it, now you're down to $1,000. You need to make 900% to get back to where you were, which is just about impossible. That's why the market leaves a lot of people broke. So, I'd hate to see this whole thing blow up, and then we'll go back to no network television.
Well, I don't know. That's the thing. Is it too big to fail, though? You know, that's my question for the whole scandal. It's really not even labeled as a scandal, but I think it is one. You know, it's been put out in a couple news media outlets that I've seen, detailing it more like a scandal than, you know, just plain allegations. But I don't think it's going to be something that's going to sink the company. Just going to make them have to look for other revenue, and they're going to have to get away from Waddell and Reed here, because that's definitely a sketchy arrangement.
Okay, but now the problem is, now there's going to be a cloud over the company.
Exactly, but these networks are hacking it. So you have all these networks behind this guy. They're going to throw lawyers at him until he can get out of it. And then they're going to hopefully still make their money at the end of all of this. You know, well, the networks make their money anyway, so they're always going to be behind him. But, you know, Al is going to tell them, oh, you know, we're going to give you more down the line. This is going to be a long-term relationship. You know, this is going to work. We're going to make the money. So these networks are just going to stand by him. And, you know, it's going to be just like the UFC suing New York to get in there, you know, just trying to use lawyers to solve their problem. And millions and millions of dollars will buy you a lot of lawyers.
Yes, it will.
But hopefully it's something that, you know, the more attention that gets put on it, the less it happens. You know, because we already know with some of these shitty decisions we've seen and the fights that should have been won by other guys, and, you know, maybe the guy's a hometown guy, maybe he's the promoter's guy, but he gets the victory. You know, that kind of shit is bad enough, but when you've got, like, real corruption like this going on behind the scenes with hedge funds and hundreds of millions of dollars to allegedly monopolize the sport, I mean, yeah, you monopolize free TV, basically, but I don't know about the sport. I could see where it was an attempt to, you know, that's their ultimate goal. I don't think they've got there yet, but. It's pissing a lot of people off, and sometimes when something like that pisses people off, it's for a reason, you know, especially the people who have been around boxing a long time. Once they start saying, you know, this is bullshit what these guys are doing, and we're going to sue them for it. Sometimes there's merit somewhere to it. You know, like they say, every rumor has a hint of truth.
Where there's smoke, there's fire.
Exactly. And I don't trust Al Haymon as far as I can throw him, even though I've been working out and I could throw him pretty far.
Yeah, it's still back on that age-old question, though. Why is boxing so filthy? It's just heartbreaking, because the sport itself of the contestants is one of the most noble sports you can come up with. I mean, and yet the behind the scenes is just some of the attitudes of these people running these things, even at the level Well, I was writing for Pro Boxing Update, and I'm sitting next to a promoter, and I was trying to talk to him, and he was telling me about something. I says, well, what do the fighters think about it? He says, they're fighters. They don't have brains. They don't think. And I'm looking at this guy, and it's like, you know, what the hell? I mean, how dare you say something like that?
Money. You know, they make money off people that they don't think. They just do, you know. And these people with all the money think, all right, well, I'm in place to do all the thinking. They're going to do all the doing.
It's almost like that pimp and prostitute arrangement.
Yeah.
God damn. I mean, I made that analogy once and to a few of the gals. Not that I see them all the time, but you know, a few of them, and they could see some of the parallels. I mean, a lot of times the fighters and the girls don't make a fraction of what they're worth. They have such a short career, then they're thrown out to pasture, and the filth running it is just,
Does that make Dana White? Right?
There you go. Yeah.
Ahead, Pim.
Can't argue. Can't argue.
Getting back to a little MMA talk here, we've got, of course, get to UFC 189 previews, but this is an interesting story I read this week. Paulo Filho, not only is he talking about a comeback, but he's talking about his addiction to cocaine. Interesting stuff here. My biggest issue, he says, was depression, awakened early by the use of cocaine. I had just beaten Chael Sonnen. I was in San Diego and went to Mexico to celebrate. I was too drunk and started to feel bad. A Mexican brought me the drug. Speaking of Donald Trump, there you go, Donald. Mexican corrupted. Mexican brought me the drug and I used it and became new again, he says. The drug brings you back up. You feel great. When it's over, you get deeply depressed, he says. And, of course, he hints that this advice could be good for John Jones. John Jones tested, obviously, in last year, got stripped of his title after a hit-and-run incident. And he says, Filho also says that John Jones has depression. He has to have it. He says, John Jones has the same disease I do. We have a genetic weakness to ingest any substance you use once and can't live without. Sooner or later, he will use it again. And obviously, Filho hasn't been as successful as Jones in the Octagon or in WEC either, but he has a 7-6-3 record since the submission win over Sonnen at WEC 31. And he was actually shot in the leg, broke his femur this past October, but he still wants to come back. Yeah, if Joe Diesel Riggs can do it after getting shot in the fucking hand. Yeah, femur's
well,
no problem.
Joe Diesel Riggs is a special kind of maniac. I hope he can keep going for a while, but man, and I think he's only like 31 or something. Riggs, it seems like he's. You look at him, you think, man, this guy can't be that young. Seems like he's been around forever, but what stories he has! Imagine. Getting into a fight with both Diaz brothers in the hospital while the needles are still sticking in your arm, ripping off all the tubes and brawling in the hallway, probably losing his hospital gown. I mean, what a spectacle.
Like the opposite of the Mickey Ward and Arturo Gatti scene in the hospital.
Yeah, right.
Who came up with the idea to put those two next to each other after a fight? Should be. That's all I know. Anyway, we got UFC 189 coming up. Big event on Saturday. They're expecting to, you know, clean house on the records for this one. But I don't know if that's just hype or if, you know, they really think this Mendez versus McGregor matchup is that great. I don't know. My opinion, I think Mendez has got no reach to even touch Khan. It's going to be a kickboxing match. So Mendez is not going to be able to use his wrestling skills, not going to get close enough to land a little short shot to knock McGregor out. And McGregor is just going to kick and jab him to death until he sets up a knockout punch. That's going to be it. Or kick.
Well, that's probably the most likely scenario. But remember, McGregor's leg is, you know, he's almost got that karate stance in some ways, and that leg is right there for a single leg takedown. And the question is, McGregor talked to him, he can do anything perfect. But I mean, we'll see. Since he's never fought a wrestler as high a level as Chad Mendes. I think Mendez's mistake, though, would be if he gets sucked into a standoff war, and he might, because apparently he says he really hates McGregor and wants to, you know, may get into one of those silly, I'm going to beat him in his own game. I think that would be wrong. I think stick with your wrestling. Get the fight to the ground if possible.
Because he's what? He's 17 in Jose Aldo, right? Jose Aldo.
Right. Yeah, that's a good way to mention his record. 17 and Jose Aldo. So that's nothing to sneeze at. I mean, he's really put everything together quite well. I mean, I think he's a live body. In one sense, would like to see how McGregor does on his back, if Chad can get him there. And because obviously it's in McGregor's best interest to keep the fight standing, and he's been damn good at it so far. No one's cracked that nut, but you know, Mendes has run over everyone that he's fought too. And he mentioned in his pre-fight interview on the MMA Weekly that MMA Insider, you know, the Fox Sports One show. I see it every week. Can't remember the name of it, but he mentioned on there that, you know, it came up about the reach disadvantage, but he says, you know, everyone I fight's had a reach advantage on me.
Right.
So we'll see I know he's used to countering it, but then the counter to that, he's never fought anyone with the speed and power and sheer stick sense of movement that McGregor's brought so far. So
I think him and Tyson Fury are both going to need a pit bull performance.
Yeah, I would have to say it's going to be a hard road for Mendez. I'm not saying he's out of it by any chance, but I just would like to see some ground action there. But until we see it, McGregor has been untouchable and Chad hasn't been. So I've got to give McGregor the nod.
On this matchup, obviously Aldo should be the opponent here. McGregor, and this is for an interim belt now, so the winner will have to fight Aldo next for the belt, the official belt, again, to go back to Aldo or whoever wins. So a third fight with Mendez, I mean, that's what's turning a lot of people off to this. You know, is that really cool, the third fight, when Mendez really didn't do much to earn that, even though if he beats McGregor, it will be seen as earning that, you know. It's kind of like, We win, McGregor wins, you know, it looks good for the UFC and everything, but Mendez wins, who wants to see that fight? So it's kind of that element to this fight. So I look at that, and I also look at Pitbull actually came out and said he wants to fight Aldo. You know, both those guys are from Brazil. So Pitbull versus Aldo in Brazil. Don't rule that shit out, you know? What if Aldo just decides I'm going to walk away at the end of my contract like, Josh Koscheck is suggesting people do? I think there's a clause where you can't walk out on the belt, but, you know, what if he finds a way to just say, see you later, UFC, I'm going to Bellator.
Well, maybe that spandex walkout jersey will keep Aldo in line, keep him there. You're getting one of them, aren't you, Rich? $95?
Hell no. They used to be in my neighborhood, too. Green Street.
You know, of all the people I can't see wearing one, Tony's at the top of the list. It just would not that would not look good. Tony, you know what we're talking about,
I can rock any
right?
look. For me? I don't, but I could probably still rock it.
Well, we got a lot of other big fights on this card. We got the co-main event, Robbie Lawler versus Rory McDonald. This is a hell of a fight. Both guys have a lot of experience. Rory is 18-2. Lawler is 25-10.
Yeah. That's just such beautiful matchmaking. And I'm torn in that one. But my little voice inside said McDonald is the future. And Robbie, in spite of the total respect I have for him and how good he's looked. It has taken him years to put everything together the way he has, but maybe he's still the past and Robbie's the future. So this is one of those I might give the nod to Robbie, and I mean give the nod to McDonald. We'll see if I'm right, but this is a tough one.
Robbie, because I like his boxing style. He's not always long on the defense there, but if he can get a little bit more power in there behind his punches and connects with Rory at all with his hands, I think Rory's going to be in over his head. One thing Rory's got for him is the height and reach and the stockiness, you know.
Well, I would say that Robbie's boxing defensive skills, I mean, you look at the head movement that he has.
Right.
And
that's his
And he has that boxing rhythm that we very seldom see in MMA, very seldom. And he's really developed that. So
I just think he sets stuff up for too long. You know, he waits a lot, and Robbie's a volume puncher. So if McDonald tries to be patient, he's going to pay for it. He's going to get punched. So I think that's the way it's going to go for Lawler. And he's got this one strategized so he can stay away from those big kicks of McDonald and, you know, his 1-2 punch combo isn't going to have much effect. If Lawler's moving his head around and ducking in and ducking out and doing his boxing thing, that's how he beat Hendrick. So I think he can beat McDonald easily that way if he fights his fight. If not, you know, he's probably going to get clocked with a head kick and go down if he goes down. That's the kind of stuff McDonald does really well. You know, he just catches you off guard somewhere, and once you're in trouble, that's it. Another one I'm really looking forward to is Dennis Bermudez fighting Jeremy Stephens, little heathen from the Iowa area. So I have a lot of friends from the beginning of Fight News Unlimited from, who knew him personally. Jeremy's 23-11, lived up to his nickname quite a bit, been in jail a couple times, dealing with shit out there in Iowa. I think Dana White bailed him out at one point, trying to get him to fight. Dennis Bermudez is no slouch. He's an Ultimate Fighter veteran. He's 14-4. And he's been mowing people down lately, so.
Oh, yeah, and he brings an energy, and so does Jeremy. That could be a fight of the night candidate very easily, because those guys can just rock'em, sock'em robots, highly skilled rock'em, sock'em robots.
And then we got Gunnar Nelson taking on Brandon Thatch in a fight where only two of their fights have not ended in victories. Gunnar is 13-1-1, and Thatch is 11-2 here, so it's a pretty decent matchup on paper, at least.
Yeah, you know, it sure is, because Gunnar's so slick with that jiu-jitsu. He's so slick. You know, on the feet, I don't know if his style's evolved, but you know, it's almost like he came from a traditional martial arts background. He had his, you know, a lot of times he'd have his hands real low, and it's like, well, but he seems to make it work. And Thatch, after that last time, the pressure's really on him. He's got to come back.
All right. And journeyman Brad Pickett, he's 24-10, fighting Thomas Almeida, who's undefeated at 18-0. I don't know much about him, never heard of him. It's the first time seeing him. But he does have a share dog picture, so he must be important.
Okay.
That's fight. I think that's probably going to lead off the main card or end the preliminaries. But Matt Brown versus Tim Means is also on this card. That's a hell of a fight. Matt Brown coming in at 19-13 and Tim Means 24-6-1. And if that's not enough, we have our former guest, John Howard. Or I've met him in person, actually. I don't think he's ever been on the show. He's 22-11. Fighting Cathal Pendred, 17-2-1, who's been very lucky, shall we say, in some of his fights to get the victory. Never really looked good to me in any of his wins. Never. Always looked very sloppy and disorganized and really shouldn't have even been in the fighter house to begin with, I think, the way he fought in the first couple opportunities he had in the UFC. And I think John Howard is going to wipe the mat with him. And I hope he does. I have nothing against Cathal, but, you know, being Irish and all, I should have something to root for and being half Irish myself. But
well, you know, he had such a build-up. such an incredible buildup, and that can work against a guy when he can't come through. I remember I was so excited. In fact, he didn't have. He was the only guy that recently didn't have to fight his way into the house. Remember? He got a pass. He got a pass. This guy was supposedly some invincible whirling dervish out of Europe. I mean, this guy was just lighting him up over there. And then what we see in that first fight, it's like, what? What is this? It was like a bad point contact karate thing, looked like to me. I mean, it was just, God, dude.
Right.
Well, yeah, and again, I not knocking him. I know he was trying as hard as he could, but that damn buildup. I mean, he just could not live up to it. So, I just think he's going to have a lot of trouble stuffing John Howard's ground game.
And here's one that kicked in the main card: Alex Garcia in the fourth fight of the night, 12-2, fighting Mike Swick, who's 15-5. Obviously, he's been around a while. He's been on hiatus a little bit. Comes back. Does all right, you know, so they don't throw him out anyway. And now he's got another fight here with a guy who's only got two losses. So good luck there, Mr. Swick. See if you still got it. And we got the third fight.
I would say just if you're looking, anyone's looking for taking an underdog, Swick, as of last night, was averaged out to about plus 350. So we'll see if Swick's back. I mean, supposedly he's healthy. He's been training in Thailand. And if he's back, look out. If I was going with an underdog, that would be the guy.
And we got Cody Garbrandt in the third fight of the night. He's undefeated, 6-0, fighting Enrique Briones, who is 16-4-1. We got Cody Pfister, 11-4-1, fighting Yosdanis Adeño, who is 10-4. And the first fight of the night, Neil Seary, 15-10, fighting Louis Smolka, 8-1. And we're going to be rooting for Louis Smolka because we can get him on the show. He's one of those folks with the agency that we got our last couple of guests from. So.
You know, Rich, here's a question for you in that Mike Brown means fight. It means, who do you think has more to lose in that fight?
I'm going to say Matt Brown because he's the bigger name, you know. He's got to maintain that, and he's had some struggles. I mean, he was near the top, and then now he's kind of sliding down. But he has the experience, just like Means, you know. They pretty much have very close experience, except Means has more wins.
Yeah, and Means has just not been able to seemingly crack that top echelon, and Brown's right on the precipice. How's that for the word?
Means has camouflage. Everybody around him is the same way. You know, he's gonna stand up and fight whenever they ask him to fight. He's not knocked out of the top 10 if he loses here. You know, it's not like his stock is going down or up at all. If he wins, it's gonna look great. But if he loses, he blends in with the environment. Matt Brown, if he loses, he's looking like one of their top guys who can't perform anymore. So, you know.
Yeah, I really think that if Brown loses, I mean, if you look at the Lawler fight, and Brown showed his toughness and durability, but I think Lawler just outboxed him. We're back on that again. I mean, if you look at the difference in that fight, Brown was just his hands were down. He was doing bum rushing at times. And Lawler just had that stance, had that movement, mixed his punches up beautiful. And then when Brown came back against Johnny Hendrick, he just couldn't stop the takedowns, and he was wrestle-fucked. So I think with Brown, he has to do something. He has to win, and I'd like to see him get a knockout for his career. Nothing against Means, though. I mean, because Means has been on quite a streak himself, so... we'll see how it goes, but I would agree with you. I think that Brown's back is really against the wall because three losses in a row, and he will probably, my feeling would be, he'll descend into gatekeeper.
Yeah. Well, it is what it is. We got to move on to boxing now. Boxing schedule for this week. We had really no results from last week, unfortunately, because there was like absolutely no combat sports, period.
I don't think there was a single televised boxing card all last weekend.
Yeah, I don't know why July 4th is like no boxing time. It makes no sense to me, you know. It's an American thing. You know, it should be done on the American holiday, Independence Day. what it is.
Well, maybe they're thinking, you know, unless it's like a huge, huge event, like they wouldn't be able to make any, live ticket sales because, unless they were. I mean, now, if I was thinking, I would try to stage something in maybe Atlantic City because for a lot of people in Pennsylvania, Southeast Pennsylvania, all areas like that, they try to go to the shore. You know, they try to go to the shore on those days or that weekend. That'd be, I think, for me, a perfect time to have a fight.
Well, how about outdoor boxing with fireworks?
Sounds even better. Love it.
At a baseball stadium. Yeah.
I can look at that.
I know it's been done at Chicago White Sox Stadium recently on ESPN. So they can do it. Anyway.
That's special. Those outdoor cards, we used to have quite a few of them here in town. And, I love them. But sometimes Mother Nature doesn't.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, true.
And then, you have Fan Man to worry about.
Thank God that was a one and done. Jeez.
Anyway, we got heavyweights going at it in Germany on Saturday. It's not Klitschko, I guess, doesn't have all the titles. This one is for the WBA World Heavyweight title, and it's Blast from the Past, Ruslan Chagaev there, 33-2-1, fighting Francesco Pianetta, 31-1-1. And I keep BoxRec's new version because they don't tell you the knockouts at all here. The co-main event there is 10 rounds, heavyweight Edmund Gerber, 24-2, versus Lubo Suda, who's 33-9-1. So, a decent fight there. See what other title bouts we got. We also have, speaking of premier boxing champions, we've got their debut on ESPN, which may be their last fight on ESPN if this shit goes and hits the fan for them. But it's a big main event. Pauly Malignaggi taking on, this one is Thurman. Thurman versus Collazo. Keith Thurman.
I'm kind of surprised here that Thurman is fighting Luis Collazo because Collazo had that near shutout loss to Amir Khan.
Yeah.
Not that long ago. And that was a fight that I thought, Collazo had a very good chance of winning, and he really just didn't show up at all. I mean, not at all. And now he's getting rewarded with a fight with Keith Thurman?
That's why. Now he's ready. It's long past East Collazo's prime. But, these fights aren't really set up, to be super competitive, I don't think. The guy who's supposed to win is supposed
to. That's the problem.
I mean, when you had Keith Thurman fight Robert Guerrero, it actually kind of turned into a fight. But Keith Thurman is supposed to win. I mean, he's got the undefeated record. And he's going to win here. But Luis is just getting known now as not just an opponent, but somebody who's going to make it look interesting. So his only hope is that he really practiced the shit out of himself, trained as hard as he possibly could to score the upset. But Keith is just such a tactician in there. I mean, for such a light guy at welterweight, he has a lot of power behind his punches, and he selects them well. Doesn't necessarily have a top-notch defense, but he moves. He moves around the ring like a madman to set up those punches that he lands. So Luis is a little bit older, up in years, and obviously that's going to affect his cardio. He's not going to be able to keep up with Keith Thurman. And he's going to lose, but he's supposed to lose. So it's hopefully just going to be a good fight. That's all we can hope for there. The main event looks actually like they're calling the main event Tony Harrison versus Willie Nelson. But I think it's supposed to be.
Willie Nelson? Isn't he really old to be fighting?
Yeah.
I mean, I know he's on the road again.
Speaking of old, yes. Willie, what are you doing? No, this is a black one.
Yeah.
23-2-1 Willie Nelson fighting Tony Harrison. He's 21-0. Also on the card, Edner Cherry, the lightweight. He's fighting a 10-rounder versus Luis Cruz. Cherry is 33-6-2. Cruz is 21-3. We got Walter Castillo at super lightweight fighting a 10-rounder versus Amit Diaz. Castillo is 25-3. Diaz is 32-11. And a late addition to this one was a surprise to me. Anthony Peterson, still only one loss, 34-1, fighting Ramesses Gil, who's only 8-11. So seems like a real tune-up fight for Peterson there. And that's a 10-rounder. Doesn't even seem like Gil has enough experience for a 10-rounder at 8-11. But he does have 5 draws, so you never know. Those are the scorecards. Peterson could be in trouble there. That wraps up that one. See what else we got going on. Hank Lundy is fighting tomorrow. No,
yes, he is. Saturday night, right? The 11th. And he's it's going to be a tough fight, you know, for Hank. Hank just got married last week. Congratulations. Kind of concerns me a little bit. He is fighting Mauricio Herrera, who gave Danny Garcia that hell of a fight last year, where a lot of people thought Herrera beat Garcia. Herrera, not a big puncher. He's like a spoiler. You know, he's just one of those guys that he has a good jab, and he can really offset your rhythm. Now, Hank is a guy that also has a good jab. He likes to switch, you know, southpaw orthodox. He is naturally, you know, I'm drawing a blank now. I believe he is naturally left-handed. And when he actually boxes conventional, his jab is like a jackhammer. But a lot of times he'll get away from it and he'll not let his hands go. And that's one thing, you know, I've watched a lot of Hank's fights that he, you know, lost, some of them being close decisions. And it's like, come on, Hank, you've got to throw more punches. And he'd be standing out there and he'd be sitting there looking for the opening, looking for the opening. And there were times that he dominated with the jab, and then he would stop throwing it. And it's like, you've got to keep using it. But he likes to switch up a lot. And that, I think, is going to be maybe his biggest advantage against Herrera. Herrera is very talented, but I don't think he's as versatile as Hank is.
And if you watch the lead-up to the Premier Boxing Champions with Broner versus Porter, you would see
right.
Porter and Lundy are best buddies, and they did a lot of yoga together getting ready for these fights. Yeah, so Hank is doing everything he has to do to maybe be on weight and, you know, stay in shape.
Hank actually will post, you know, photos when he comes in, and he'll post his little tracker or whatever it is, how many miles he went. Like, the other day went like something like 8.5 miles or something like that. And, you know, he'll post photos when he's on the scale just showing that he is on weight. And he is right there. He's not cutting anything for this fight. He is,
I mean,
a week ago where he has to be.
You know, ladies in the mats and shit that he's doing with Porter either. I mean, like, you know, you hear yoga, you think wussy lady stuff, and, you know, you like.
Yeah, we had DDP on, remember?
Yeah, this is not DDP yoga either. This is Bikram yoga, they call it, where they jack the room temperature up like over 100 degrees, and you're supposed to do all these standing poses. And, you know, you could see these guys sweating their balls off in this room. You know, they only get so many water breaks, and man, it definitely looks like it does something to you. It helps out with some of the stuff. And Porter and him were doing it together. And, you know, obviously they were training together with some other stuff out there in Vegas. And Henry is, Hank is based out there in Vegas now with Sean Porter. So, you know, if they're working together, I guess that's a good sign for Hank.
Yeah,
they've been friends, but they seem like they've known each other a long time, and you know they get along with each other. And I don't know if they spar too, but it would make sense, you know, if you wanted a little heavier guy to match up with. But this actually fight is for the vacant NABF super lightweight title too. So if Hank wins, he gets a belt. We're definitely gonna be rooting for that. We also have a couple other 10 rounders that are interesting here. This is a solid card all around, actually, the top four fights. We have Michael Perez at lightweight. He's 22-1-2, fighting Sharif Bougueri, who is 27-1. And we got featherweights, 10-rounders, Joseph Diaz versus Rene Alvarado. Joseph is 16-0. Alvarado is 22-4. And then we have a really nice female fight here, which you don't see too often, ladies with these kind of records. But we have Melinda Cooper at bantamweight here. She's 23-2. Fighting Carolina Arias, who is 10-1, so only 3 losses among these two ladies. fighting for the vacant WBO World Female Bantamweight title. That wraps up that card. What else we got going on this weekend? You gotta love it when they have cards on BoxRec listed for tomorrow, and everybody on the right side is TBA.
Yeah, I don't know how it would work.
What are you TBA. I'm gonna pick here. He's gonna throw these guys together. Yeah. Anyway, I think that's about it. So this is another slow week for boxing. These title fights, televised stuff. Which is why Golden Boy's pissed off. Bob Arum, too. Golden Boy and Bob Arum doing the same thing together, even though they're not on the same lawsuit. That tells you they're pissed off. Something's going on. Anyway, that's really all the prepared news and events I had to talk about. You guys got any other things to chew on?
Well, you know, a few observations, you know, I like to make, because, you know, I always like to, you know, talk good things here. And, you know, obviously I didn't get to talk with you guys last week since I did a pre-recorded 30-minute segment. One thing, you know, obviously we shared an email back and forth, and I'll talk about it live on the air. September 12th, it's been announced at the Xfinity Live Center, and I'll be actually right down there this weekend. I'm going to try to get a scouting to see where they're going to do the ceremony and the statue unveiling for the Joe Frazier statue. That's going to be September 12th. That's the weekend of my birthday. So what my game plan is, I usually do the Phillies game the weekend of my birthday, if provided they're home, and they are that weekend. So what I'm probably going to do is the ceremony is going to be from 1 to 4. The game's at 7. So I might get down there around noonish time, and then go to the ceremony, and then head over, do a pregame party, because there is a bar kind of nightclub that is attached to the Philly Stadium, and they kind of know me there. So when I walk in, they give me a big shout out, and I usually get a few free drinks when I'm in there. Maybe because of the way I'm dressed, I don't know why. And so they usually throw me a pretty nice birthday party. So I'm going to try to make it an all-inclusive weekend. And then God knows, you know, how somebody has to drive me home.
Oh, then we're going to explain, Tony, and go to Box Fan Expo out in Vegas. So
I can. I'm going to the Frazier statue. I donated that thing. You're damn right I'm going to be there.
After the statue, though, we're going to hop on the plane, and we're going to go to Box Fan Expo in Vegas. Oh,
maybe.
Paid when my logging pays off.
Now, the other thing is, and I might be spilling the beans here because I don't know if any of my coworkers are listening, but one thing that, and I'm not happy about it with my job sometime within the next year, probably about 8 months from now, is set to move to Center City, Philadelphia.
What?
Actually, not far from where you had taken the train that time, Rich, right where you were telling me you were at. And I'm not happy about it. I mean, that's a longer commute for me and a higher wage tax. And it's, you know, generally an inconvenience. And I'm against it in every facet of the way until they said, hey, next week at work, we're going to have like a little celebration on Thursday. We're going to call it Countdown to Downtown. And we're inviting everybody to wear something that represents the city of Philadelphia.
There you go.
Now, everybody's expecting me to do something. They actually used to do contests for all these things until I started there, and I used to win every stinking time, so they stopped doing contests. Now, yeah, true. I mean, I started the one time we were doing something like Mardi Gras themed, and I came in wearing this crazy Mardi Gras hat, and they're like, okay, you win the prize. And another day they were doing something like crazy, like there was another crazy hat day. Well, as you see my photos, I own every crazy hat there is to own. I won that one. We had one time I was part of a culture club in our call center area trying to, hey, you know, increase the morale, boost the morale, or bullshit like that. I came in dressed up as a clown. Because, you know, me, first of all, I had brain damage. And second of all, I have no shame. I don't care. This year for Halloween, I showed up as Randy Macho Man Savage. So now it's like, what can we do? Well, here's what everybody's expecting. Okay, and I'll throw it to you guys out there. Countdown to Downtown. Wear something that represents the city of Philadelphia. What would you guys expect me to wear?
Apollo Creed.
Yeah.
Tom, what would you say?
Same thing.
Here's
gotta
the problem.
Go with Apollo.
I've already worn that there twice.
Oh.
I've already worn that hat there, and I wore the cape one time too, and I did that twice. They need something fresh and new out of me, right?
Right.
So we're going to go the opposite side. We're not going to go with Apollo. We're going to go with a black leather fedora. We're going to go with a gold and black Italian stallion shirt and a black and gold Italian stallion robe. And I'm going in as Rocky. I'm taping my hands up and everything.
We got to get the, we got pictures. Man, I can
picture
that. And I know of all the people that can pull that off, and most people couldn't. You could. You could.
You know what's funny? We're going to go back to my little bit of brain damage here. This was 2006, right before Rocky Balboa had gotten released. And, you know, this is before I knew my scenes were getting cut, before I got very bitter about it. I was all excited because I was in the movie and all, you know, all that. So that year for Halloween, I was going as Rocky. But I was also spoofing it because he was 60 years old making that movie, and he was competing in this one. So I got the Italian stain shirt, the black, and I was like, and it was like, well, it's Rocky, you got to go with the red, white, and blue outfit. This is long before I had that Apollo-looking outfit. I said, no. I said, if you go back and watch the Rocky movies, you know, yeah, he wore, you know, the meatpacking plant robe and the white trunks in the first one, but traditionally, Rocky was black and gold. You know, Rocky II, he wore the black and gold, and in the beginning of Rocky III, when they were showing the montage of all his title defenses, he was always in gold with black trim or black with gold trim, you know, and then even in Rocky Balboa, he was wearing black and gold. So that's what I was going with. So I had the black trunks with the gold trim, the Italian stallion robe. I had my hands all taped up, and I actually shaved my goatee for the time in about 10 years for this. Shaved the goatee, and I had gotten some, you know, Halloween costume makeup, like that putty to make give you like swollen eyes and stuff, and I got like a couple of those glue-on cuts and all the different abrasions and all stuff like that. And we were having a party at my house, and I said, you know, because I'd never done makeup like that before, I said, I'm going to do it. This is a dress rehearsal. I said, and I said, Dad, I want to see how I can do with this makeup. I said, listen, if I can't get it right tomorrow before this Halloween party that I'm going to with a $500 costume contest, I said, you will swell my eyes shut.
Mm-hmm.
He looked at me. He said, what? I'm like, you will give me two shiners if I need you to. I said, you will punch me underneath both eyes, you will swell my cheekbones up, and you will give me two black eyes. And I'll just throw some fake blood over top of it. And he looked at me, and he thought I was kidding. I wasn't. And just fortunately or unfortunately, I don't know which side you're taking on this, I was able to get the makeup right.
That's funny. Anyway, yeah. But we definitely got to get some boxing on the show next week. We've done all these mixed martial arts guys. We've got to get a boxer on the show next week. So I'm going to try to...
Absolutely. I'm always down for that.
I never tried reaching out to any of the guys you sent to me, Tony. I'm really sorry about that, but, you know, I expected them to send you something back first.
Yeah, you know what? And I could say the same thing, you know. I mean, I sent them the emails, you know, and I'll do something again. I'll hit Simon Carr up again. I'll hit Dave Price up again. I'll email Buddy McGirt again, trying to get those three moving. I'll hit up Garrett Wilson and, you know, see if we can get any movement on that.
Definitely.
Yeah, that would be good. And you know, just last Saturday they had that 30 for 30 episode that you guys have probably seen about Duran Leonard. And
maybe I'll just write a nasty article about Al Heyman and see if he'll come on the show to talk about it.
There you go. and some of that school stuff. You know, like I was saying, it just reminded me of how big those fights were back then. And if we could ever get back there, it'd be great.
Yeah, Al is the new Don King, except he's not as outspoken for us.
He's not as charismatic.
Yeah, he's like anti-matter. Matter and anti-matter.
Yeah, right. You know what's funny? It's when Rich and I went to that Marciano statue unveiling a couple years ago, and the first few speakers went too long. They had guys from Rocky's hometown in Italy that were there. These guys gave like a 10-minute speech about nothing.
Yeah, right.
And then when it's coming up to the important speeches, Don King, you know, Jose Suleiman, who funded the project, you know, Larry Holmes, Peter Marciano, all these guys, and it was the thing was running so damn long. But like, we're asking all of our speakers to go 1 to 2 minutes. Don King has never gone 1 to 2 minutes in his life. Don King can talk longer than 1 to 2 minutes in his sleep. Time got up there, you know, and I was trying to time it, and it was like no less than 6-7 minutes, you know, and I was like, and I even wrote in my blog post after that, I was like, you know, they were asked to keep, the speakers were asked to keep it between 1 to 2 minutes. I said, nearly impossible when the loquacious Don King was handed the microphone.
Good old Donnie boy. He's still hanging on.
Yes, he is. What, like 83 now?
With one pinky, he's hanging on to his boxing legacy.
Hey.
And an American flag waving still.
What do you have, like 8 flags that night? American flag, Italian flag, Puerto Rican flag, Mexican flag, Armenian flag, Czechoslovakian flag, Peru.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. In fact, you know, he was Leonard's, Duran's promoter for that first Leonard fight, and he's back there behind you, Viva Panama! Viva Panama! Oh, what a cheap whore.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
You know, if China invaded us and they broke into Don King's nursing home, he'd be waving the Chinese flag for them.
Yeah, really.
He'd be the kind of guy, it's like, you're sitting there, like, he'd be in the nursing home, and they'd be invading it, and he'd say, oh, my God, we're Chinese. And he'd be pulling out the Chinese flag and starting to wave, and they'd, like, and they'd say, actually, no, we're from, like, Mongolia. He'd throw that flag right down, reach back under the bed, and he'd come up with the Mongolian flag.
Got it somewhere. Box of flags.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to take a page out of Conor McGregor's book, and I'm going to say thanks. Thanks for stopping by, folks, and good luck watching the fights this week. It's going to be a big event for UFC. They think they're going to shatter all live gate records and pay-per-view and all this other stuff. They do have a good card, but I don't know. I still thought the better fight was Aldo versus McGregor,
yes,
which we might see for a while now. But I don't knock Aldo. You know, bad rib is a bad rib. I've had broken ribs or at least one broken rib from sparring myself, so I know it sucks. And, you know, even though the UFC doctor didn't think it was a break, it's obviously been confirmed it was a break, so no way he could have fought anyway. So hopefully it all gets pulled together and looks good, but we'll see. And then Premier Boxing Champions, I don't know. I think the network backing might save them, but they're in for a lot of hot water before they get into smooth sailing with that shit. And we'll be looking forward to the Fury versus Klitschko details coming out and what other kind of undercard fights are going to be on that card, too. So waiting on Carl Froch versus Gennady Golovkin. I know that's being discussed. It's either retirement or that fight for Froch, so that could be another big one that gets announced soon. And Andre Ward's the next opponent, still up in the air. Nobody wants to fight him, as usual. So we'll see. But big stuff going on in both sports, MMA and boxing. We'll definitely have plenty to talk about next week, and we will get a guest for sure.
Sounds great.
All right, guys. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the fights, as always. Over and out.
All right. Hasta la vista, gentlemen. See you later.
Good night. Serial
killer, Dr. Michael Swango, has left the United States to continue his killing spree.
The last time I had to do an immediate job in Africa, and I said, well, you kill people there. I'm going to tell you know about this. No matter where you go, you're going to kill people.
And it turned out that black homicide occurred while he was working as a doctor in a field hospital in Zimbabwe.
Yeah, but where the record keeping was, you can read the whole character. You can get away from you.